And I realize that if you're the goddess of love, you stand witness to all that love is, and yet that's the one thing denied you.
That's Julie Berry, and I'm Dan Skinner. This is Conversations. Julie Berry is the author of numerous novels, including All the Truth That's in Me and The Passion of Dulce. She joins us to talk about her latest novel, Lovely War. Julie, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Dan. Great to be here.
This new novel, it doesn't deal with just mere mortals. It's, you know, we're dealing with gods and goddesses here, and it's narrated by Aphrodite. So tell us about the story that readers are going to find here in Lovely War.
Sure. Well, Lovely War is two love stories set during World War I. It's two young couples who meet as a result of the war and fall in love. But what makes this perhaps a little different from other stories set during World War I and other love stories is who's doing the telling. And it is chiefly Aphrodite, goddess of love, but she has a little help from Ares, god of war, Apollo, god of music, and Hades, lord of the underworld. And these gods are gathered together in a hotel room because Hephaestus, Aphrodite's jealous husband, has captured her there along with her lover, Ares. So they meet up for what appears to be a tryst, and Hephaestus catches them there, literally in the act, in a golden net, and puts Aphrodite on trial for infidelity. And so that's the setup of the story. These gods meet in 1942 at the height of World War II. And to plead her defense, Aphrodite looks back to World War I and tells these two stories.
Well, I want to talk more about that in just a moment, but I want to learn about how this book came into being. Was there a particular inspiration for this novel?
Well, I began thinking about perhaps writing a World War II novel. And as I started researching some topics that interested me about life on the home front during World War II, I realized that a lot of the initiatives that took place during World War II had gotten their start in World War I. Things like metal drives and women working in factories and women, you know, farming the land and victory gardens and all those things that we hear about. And I thought, well, isn't that interesting? Because we talk so much more about World War II than World War I. I didn't know that all of these things got their start one war before. And then I started thinking, why don't we talk about World War I more? And that began my journey. So that's how it started. And then as far as the idea of adding the gods to the storytelling mix, I was looking for a unique perspective, one that would allow me to both get close to my mortal characters, my young lovers, and really understand their feelings, but also a perspective that would see the war in a broader, more bird's-eye global sense, and a sense that could put the war into context of broader history. And for that, I needed a more omniscient perspective. And so that's how gods became a good choice.
Tell me a bit about the research you had to do for this book, because obviously it's fiction, but you have to make sure that all the facts ring true.
Absolutely. You know, it's very important to me, even though I have gods telling my story, it's very important to me that the story that they tell is accurate, or at least historically accurate, factually and culturally accurate, even though I've made up most of the characters. So the research was one of the great joys of this process, also, you know, one of its rigors. But I spent over a year reading everything I could about the war, and in particular about the war's impact on people, on society, and how it changed society, how it changed life for women, how it changed life for African Americans, and how it brought the world into contact in ways that it hadn't been before. So I did a great deal of reading and research. Wonderful thing about World War I is we have some footage of it, and we have audio archives of the stories of many of the people who lived through it. The British Museum made an amazing audio history project in the 1970s where they interviewed all kinds of veterans, but also women who served, all kinds of people who lived through the war, to get them to tell their stories in their own voices, their own words. That was a treasure beyond price for my process. I also took a trip to France with my husband, France and Belgium, and we visited many of the sites in the story, which was so moving. And to stand at the grave sites of soldiers and to stand on battlefields and look at monuments and to visit underground bunkers and tunnels and trenches, I'll never forget those experiences.
In a moment, I want to talk about your four main characters, but first of all, a bit more about the gods and goddesses here, because as you talk about Aphrodite, we realize that she's actually a very sad character in that she's never, even though she's the goddess of love, she herself never really feels love in the way that humans can.
You know, that was sort of something I stumbled upon as I wrote. I realized that while the gods are notorious for their romantic dalliances, as we encounter them in mythology, we don't really find what we would consider deep and lasting and moving love in their stories. And I thought about that. Why would that be? And as I wrote these human love stories, I came to the conclusion that love demands a frailty, a mortality, a brokenness, and a vulnerability, that we cling to one another in love because we need each other. And there's something needless about a perfect and immortal God. And so that became a really interesting kernel to sort of chew on. And I realized that if you're the goddess of love, you stand witness to all that love is, and yet that's the one thing denied you. And so that was a very interesting twist on Aphrodite that I sort of hit upon, and it motivated much of the story.
And right from the beginning of the book, she has this conversation with the other gods and says, "You don't really love me. I don't really love you." And part of it is, as you talked about, is the fact that they do live forever. And so they don't value love in the same way that a human can. And I thought that was interesting to juxtapose the immortality of the gods with the transient nature of life, especially during a time of war.
Mm, for sure. I mean, war brings us in such close contact with death, and it makes mortality perhaps most painful. Of all human experiences, war confronts us with more death than anything else we might face, unless perhaps you work in a trauma hospital or something like that. And so, you know, perhaps at no other time than in times of war do we wish for immortality. Do we wish that our lives were not so fleeting? And yet, even a fleeting life is graced with a poignancy that perhaps an endless life could not be.
Tell us about the four main human characters here as Aphrodite tells the story back in World War I.
So the first couple that we meet are Hazel and James. And Hazel is a young British girl from Poplar, East London. She plays piano. She comes from a sort of working class family that has sacrificed to give her lessons. And she meets James at this parish dance in London, where he is right on the eve of reporting for duty on the Western Front, and he goes to this dance. And they meet, and because Aphrodite is telling us the story, she tells us about how they meet at this dance and how James, you know, finds the courage to ask for that first dance, and how Hazel finds herself accepting, even though she's normally too shy for such things. And of course, as so often happens when two sweet and shy young people meet for the first time on the dance floor, they begin to fall in love. But of course, they have a little help from the goddess of love, so you might say they were doomed from the start. And so they meet and fall in love, and all too soon James reports for duty. And so Hazel makes a decision as soon after he's gone that she's going to leave home, leave the comforts of her parents and her life, and follow James to France and serve as a volunteer in the war. Not following him per se. I mean, she's not where he is, but she wants to do her part to help the war as well. Do her bit, as they said back then. And so she becomes a YMCA volunteer, and it was while she's serving at a U.S. training camp in France that she meets Colette Fournier, who is a Belgian refugee who has lost her entire family to the German invasion of Belgium in the first weeks of the war. And Colette is a very kind person and very thoughtful and wise, and she also is a singer. So she and Hazel practice music together. And in so doing, they meet Aubrey Edwards, who is an American serviceman, a member of the Harlem Hellfighters Regiment from New York. And this regiment, which was an all-black regiment in the segregated U.S. Army, is famous for many things, including its ragtime army band, of which Aubrey is a member. And so he's a ragtime pianist, very different from Hazel's style of music. And so it's music that brings them together. And of course, Aubrey and Colette soon fall in love. And so these are our two couples. One sort of meets in perhaps a very traditional way due to the war, and the other meets because the war really mixes up the world and brings cultures and peoples into contact that would never have met otherwise.
One of the things I found interesting is that Aphrodite would intervene and bring these people together because she would sense the need in them and that they had the potential to come together. And also in the process of interacting with humans, you write this such that sometimes the humans recognize her and can see her, and other times they don't notice her at all.
That was fun. The general idea is that the gods move amongst us unseen by us, but that they take upon them the guise of humans just in case, because there are those extra perceptive, extra aware mortals who sense their presence to varying degrees. So it was really fun to dress them up, so to speak, in costumes and roles. And there's a fun scene where Aphrodite is trying to bring Hazel and James closer together over breakfast and coffee at a London tea shop. And when the waitress is sluggish at her duties, Aphrodite quickly becomes the waitress and provides a little extra TLC to her young couple and conjures up some lemon cake, which you'd never find in, you know, war-rationed London at the time. So it's kind of cute to play with that idea of her meddling from time to time, but mostly acting as an observer.
So readers see these love stories develop. And ultimately, without giving away too much of the plot here, you know, this is Aphrodite's defense. She's telling this story. So what is she trying to prove by sharing these stories from World War One?
Well, I think what the book is really exploring and what is really the crux of Aphrodite's case is whether or not love is still relevant in a war-torn world, and a modern industrial warfare world. Does love even have a chance? Do life and hope even have a chance in a world where humans are capable of and evidently willing to kill one another on such a massive scale? So, you know, we have the benefit of hindsight where we can say, well, you know, life went on, but life did not go on for a great number of people. Many lives and loves were cut short. Was it worth it then? And could any of them have known that the planet would survive this devastating episode of chaos and destruction? So I think that's really the question that she's asking or that she's answering, so to speak. She's arguing that even in times of war, and especially in times of war, it's her work of bringing people together in loving ties, not just romantic, but all loving ties, that holds humanity together and gives life its purpose.
Do you think that beyond being an entertaining story, that that's the takeaway for this novel about the power of love?
I hope so, but I hope it also has a lot to say, and I think it does. I think even though the World War One is, you know, a century old now, I think that the issues leading up to it are entirely relevant, and the problems that society faced of racism and injustice and economic and international bigotry and hatred and prejudice, I think these issues are very much with us. So I think that World War One is more timely than ever, and that young people and people of all ages need to be reminded of what our grandparents and great-grandparents sacrificed for us and what kinds of movements in the world, dictatorships and gross injustices, led to those catastrophes, and how we could fall into the same errors again. We take so much for granted, and particularly peace. We fail to appreciate how lucky we are.
I'm talking with Julie Berry. Her latest novel is Lovely War. Julie, there's a question that I like to ask authors of fiction, and it's this. If you could spend a day in real life with one of the characters you created for this book, who would it be and why?
Well, I think my answer there would have to be Aubrey Edwards, and he's one of my favorite characters. Of course, I say they all are, and it's true, they all are. But Aubrey is such a vibrant character. He's so much fun. He's so resilient, so talented, and yet he has, in many ways, faced the most hardship throughout his life of all the characters. Well, I guess it's kind of hard to compare those in the time of war, where so many people suffered so greatly. But he has faced hostility and persecution from his country for the privilege of fighting for his country. And yet throughout it all, he maintains this buoyancy and humor that are really endearing. And he is sort of a stand-in for a real person in history who does appear in the story also. His name is James Reese Europe, who's a great composer and band leader in the Harlem Hellfighters Army Band. And in some ways, Aubrey allows me to explore what Europe's life would have been like had he been allowed to live past the war. He was tragically killed in the year after the war by one of his own musicians who was shell-shocked and got mad at him over a trifling thing. So Aubrey is both a student of James Reese Europe in the novel and a surrogate for him had he been allowed to live a full life.
Julie, thank you very much for talking with me today.
Thank you, Dan, for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Julie Berry's latest novel is Lovely War. You'll find more interviews on a wide variety of topics at kansaspublicradio.org/conversations. You can use the KPR app to listen on your phone or tablet. You can sign up for the Conversations podcast on iTunes, and you'll also find us on Facebook. Conversations is a production of Kansas Public Radio. I'm Dan Skinner. Thanks for listening.